you ever felt.
Are you listening? Damn.
It prevents most of that, not all the time.
Okay.
I did have an entire podcast where we had to re-record, like the whole thing. But it was with an actor, which was good. So I tried my best to fake, like I hadn't had that conversation the day before. It's like, oh my God.
put your acting skills to test.
Yeah, like your surprise face, like, oh my, what do you mean? Like, no way.
That's amazing.
It was a trip, you know, but he was adding to it like more flair. He's like, there was enough flair in yesterday. I was like, okay, here we go.
So. Fair enough.
Well, Zamia Cohen, everybody, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you so much for having me.
I know we don't really know each other. We just had our first legitimate conversation sort of pre-show. And we've, I think like a lot of people have sort of met each other through some iteration online or another. Ours, I think, happened to be a bit of a mutual relationship between Tate Fletcher.
Yes.
And it was like started spiraling, and then we just started kind of communicating on each other's posts and liking and sharing. And then I saw the other day that that you were on a podcast, and I was like, awesome. Because it's really strange. As much as a lot of like my close friends, a lot of my online fan base and friends love being in front of their camera, like in a selfie status.
Right.
It's like there is this underlying fear of being on a podcast in like long form in front of a camera. And they're just like, I can't do that. No. Like, what do you mean? So when I saw that, I was like, hey, she's willing to do a podcast. Let's go. You know? So,
I mean, for me, they're not always like visually recorded, which is a different story, but for me, at least, there's often, if information can be shared that's helpful to somebody, I mean, I'm definitely in the industry of service, so even if it has nothing to do with what I do for a living, if we somehow help somebody, it's worth it, even if I'm uncomfortable for a little bit.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so, and that's one of the big things. And so, you know, a few months, so it's probably been 8 or 9, probably pushing 9 months ago, I sort of had this like realization one evening, and I've told this story on this podcast ad nauseum, but me and my wife and I were in Denver. We were at a comedy show, had an amazing night drinking, tearing up the town. It was so fun. Woke up the next morning and it was like, kind of was like, I don't want to drink anymore. You know what I mean? And then I didn't go scorched earth on anybody. I didn't ruin my marriage, you know, nothing like that. It wasn't a, you know, rock bottom moment. It was like, this is the way to kind of move on past this in your life. And, you know, I've since sort of started this journey, because for me, with having like a very addictive personality, you know, stopping or quitting drinking wasn't enough. I had to do something else, like put another skillet in the fire. And so it was like, okay, well then I'm going to start working out again. And then I got really, really into, you know, heat therapy and cold therapy, and just sort of started going down this road and did, you know, like an all meat diet, you know? And so it's been really interesting, because I think it's like seeing that, like, the red truck theory, right? When you want to buy a red truck, you've never seen one on the road before. And then all of a sudden it's like, you see a damn red truck everywhere you go.
Exactly.
And, but it's weird. It's like when you're putting that out into the world, these people that, you know, are of like mind, they sort of kind of start to just come into your purview out of nowhere. Like it feels like sometimes out of thin air, and you almost like start to draw from what you're seeing. And it's like, well, I didn't find you. Like, we didn't know each other from Adam.
Right.
And but then I start following you and I'm like, what she's doing is very helpful to the world. You know what I mean? Like just, it's just always been strange to me that when your mind really sort of gets narrow and focused, it also broadens on the other side of that wall that you've had there for a while. And
Absolutely.
So when I, you know, after the first couple of exchanges, you know, I started being like, well, who the hell is this? You know, who's Good Human Fitness on Instagram? And, you know, it was like, oh, she's doing some really good shit. And, you know, just started following what you were doing and posting, and have even shared some of those things like with my wife and like, you know,
oh,
hey,
yay,
check this out. So,
lovely.
So anyways, I wanted to have you come on because I haven't had a podcast in a little while that was really kind of health and fitness related. I felt like I was sort of beating a dead horse because I needed to, right? It was very selfish. Right. It's like I needed to keep putting that out there in the world of like, oh, we want to do the caveman diet, or you want to, you know, and it was like, God, I bet people are sick to death of hearing me say this shit. So,
well, possibly, but also I think, especially in the realm of nutrition and training, movement, exercise, health, there's also so much dogmatic fill in the blank topics around it, right? It's like, oh, you have to be carnivore. Oh, you have to be vegan. Oh, you have to powerlift. Oh, you have to cold plunge, right? It's like everything, why does it have to be this or that also, right? It can be some of it. It can be both of it. It can be fluctuations between them. And I think the more people feel like it's being presented in an open fashion instead of a hard closed lane, the easier it is to even keep hearing it, right? Because it's not just one thing that they feel they're have being shoved down their throat, but more of an idea around the movement, an idea around the nutrition. Mm-hmm. And ultimately what I say to people, because I'm a personal trainer or nutrition coach, but at the end of the day, I'm helping people manage behaviors through the vessel of food and movement. Right.
Interesting.
And that's what it comes down to. It's behavior, right? And that's, I can give you an amazing nutrition plan or amazing training program, but if you don't follow it, it's be shit.
Sure.
Right? Like that doesn't work. So it's about understanding people and meeting them where they are and presenting an idea with them instead of telling them what to do. Mm-hmm. So they're a little more receptive to it and finding out what might actually be appealing to them in how to eat, in how to train, right? Especially if they're coming from eating horribly, never exercising, it all feels so overwhelming. So anything I think that can diminish that feeling is always a good thing. And having options, right?
Sure,
the more
absolutely.
We're told what to do, the more we resist it, right?
Yeah, you want to push back like...
yeah.
And that's the worst in this kind of, you know, I keep saying this journey for me, because I don't think that it's ever going to stop, you know? And you know, honestly, I think Tate of the few people I know, is he's a damn wordsmith, you know? And the guy, he can articulate something so well. I hear him say something and it just like, it just blows me away. And what he had a very interesting take on the journey, right? He's like, look, man, when you were 20, that train was moving. It was cruising right along. And then you fucked around. And you know, you kind of got off the train and you got back on when you were 30. And it wasn't that big of a leap. You got back. But that train, it still kept going. He's like, every time you derail and get off that and you try and jump back on, you're not jumping back on that train where you left it. You know, it's continued to go. So it gets harder and harder. So instead of having this ebb and flow of, you know, being good and then fucking off and being good and being diligent, you know, and then hitting rock bottom and all of a sudden you're 40 pounds. You just have to maintain. It has to be a behavioral every single day. And that's honestly the hardest thing for me is to, you know, it's like I'll have 6, 8, 9 months of doing really, really good. And then there'll be like this weird slip up moment and it's a day or it's 2 days or it's 2 weeks. The next thing you know, it's like 6 months later and you're like, well, I've really slacked off of working off. I'm still doing the sauna and the cold plunge, but you're absolutely correct. I don't know that it can't be just me. Everybody wants to say
yeah. It's not. Okay. First of all, we're human beings, right?
Yeah.
I think what I will say is a fair amount of stuff right now, but all about that. And this is, I think, part of the challenge most people have, especially initially, and is that there's this idea of it has to be perfect, right? Which wrong. Nothing's perfect, right?
Sure.
We're not perfect. You don't need to do anything perfectly to get the results that you're looking for. They may be a little bit slower in getting them, but the important thing is to be whatever it is you're doing, or all of the things that you're doing, to find a way to implement them now, and they're allowed to change, in a way that's sustainable for you, right? So if you're looking at your exercise program and you ask yourself, could I do this, literally do this for the rest of my life, the way I'm doing it right now? Can I eat this way for the rest of my life, the way I'm doing it right now? Can I plunge? Can I heat, right? And there's nuances to it, but especially with training and especially with nutrition, if it's really strict and really regimented and doesn't account for the fluidity of life, right? Things happen. And especially if you have a family, right? Things happen. If that isn't factored into the picture, it's really hard to sustain the way you're doing it, especially if you don't leave that space of, okay, I'm sick, the kids are sick, the wife isn't sick. Hopefully that sticks, right? So we're going to have to, but I mean, when there's kids, it's a constant back and forth of people being sick, right? And I just say that because most of my clients have kids and my friends have kids, and that's the reality of life. And it slows things down, but it's also, that's your life, right? So acting like it isn't doesn't make sense for you to find a current version of the thing that you can actually do pretty well, right? And being pretty good most of the time adds up. It's not about perfection. And I think sometimes that's where people kind of get hung up. And when they have a day or two, especially if it's not one day and you start to notice it's a second one, if you ignore it, it's not going to probably get fixed. But importantly, simply being honest, trying to remove the judgment, which is, again, the very hard part, at ourself with, okay, why did day one happen? Why did day two happen? And it's not a good or bad. It's like, what was different that it didn't go the way it's been going? So trying to understand your whys, this is how I operate with clients. Like, understanding your whys helps you repeat the things that are working well and get ahead of the things that clearly weren't working as well. But if we're like, I sucked. Yeah, you don't tend to go somewhere nice when you have that conversation with yourself, right?
Sure.
I mean, you sit there for a second, but like then remove the judgment and be like, okay, what stopped working? Because I was doing really well for 9 months. What happened? Oh, I got sick. Oh, then we went on vacation. Oh, someone passed away. You know, it can be a string of things that are outside of your control. And again, all we can control is us, which I'm not saying it's easy, but that's where the control is. And realistically finding the things that you can actually do relatively easily daily are the places to spend more time.
That's an interesting way to look at it.
It's really easy to let yourself get thrown off course if you don't take a step back and ask yourself why. Again, not a judgmental, but like, what was different? Why did that suddenly stop working so well? Right.
Yeah. That's a good point. Cause if it's like you feel like the wheels fall off sometimes and you are like a couple of weeks out of it or a month or what, you know, cause it could be 6 months, but if you just take a step for a second and be like, well, what happened differently? What, you know what I mean? Especially like, so I was going so hard with working out, so hard with dieting. And it's like, I did get that burnout, which is weird because I was having results, which was crazy. Like, I mean, the results were phenomenal, you know? And for me, it was like, all of a sudden it's like you're a couple of weeks. And then, so last week it's like, okay, I have to, it's go time, Richard. You know, it's like, we gotta get in the gym. We gotta go. And the thing of it was like, oh, there it is. I feel so damn good. But it's just like, you are totally right. It's like, you got to step away from it for a second and go, well, why, what was a little different? Do you let work? I mean, you were working during that 9 months, you know what I mean? When you were just going crazy. I mean, so you needed a breather, you know? So that's an interesting way to look at it.
And it can be a variety of things. It can be, I don't know, in terms of training, we'll just stick with the training part. I don't know how many days you were training. I don't know what that program looked like. I don't know if you just were doing stuff on your own, if you were following someone's program. But a good cycled program isn't the same the whole time. The intensity isn't the same the whole time. The volume isn't the same the whole time. And if recovery isn't a huge part of it, especially as we get older, but in general, if recovery isn't factored in, I don't just mean cold plunging, right? Recovery from how you train is important. And so that undulation in the design of the program is really important, because you can go hard for a while. You can be really strict with your diet for a while until you're not, right? Sure. And that's often what happens. And so there's got to be that change and that shift, not from everything to nothing, but you can go hard for a while and then intentionally go less hard for a while and then go hard again for a while, right? You also want your body to keep adapting. Mm-hmm. But if we feel like we're getting burnt out, that's really important to pay attention to. And it's not because you're necessarily doing anything wrong. The program that you're following may just not be right for you. And so, and I'll see this too. I actually just started recently with a client who had been following a good program design, but it wasn't for him specifically. And gotcha. He's also a drummer. It was a hypertrophy program. And so for his training partner, who sits at a desk all day, wasn't having the same kind of issues. But this guy's drumming multiple times a week. And so this program worked until it really started not working. And so especially if something isn't being designed for you, and I'm not saying you have to start hiring someone to design for you, but those are things to pay attention to. Mm-hmm. Like there should be shifts in the training program that you're in for account. Yeah.
I can definitely see that from I've never worked with a personal trainer at all. It's always just been, and that, you know, I have certain things that I do, and I was doing them every day going hard as fuck.
and that lasts until it doesn't.
Exactly. Until you're like, even though I knew that doing it would make me feel good, and that was like kind of a micro win for the day, it's just like all of a sudden it started to like, something inside of me was like, either I was bored with it or, you know, but that's such an interesting thing to think about, because even though the results are there, and that's, you know, kind of, you know, health and wellness and working out sometimes, you know, from an outsider's perspective or a view from the world in, can have a bit of vanity backing it, right? Sometimes you're doing it because, like, you know, I'm a slob and I want to look better, right? Maybe if that's what you need to move forward, I don't have a problem with that. Be vain as hell as long as you're healthy with it.
You still, generally speaking, get the cool benefits of it, right? Years ago, I had a client. She was like 65, just a little tiny petite woman. She's like, at the very beginning, she's like, just so you know, I totally just do this so I look good. I'm like, okay, great. Well, we both know you're getting the health benefits, so awesome.
sure.
Like, she was honest, great, right? And thankfully, again, when it's done decently well, that's a natural side effect. But we all want to look nice, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and honestly, in a weird way of like looking nice does actually make you feel better. And it's hard for even myself. I've been a victim of, or, you know, have that victim mentality where, you know, I found myself like 44 pounds overweight, and it was just like, I wasn't, you know, I was more like at myself, but I've seen and witnessed and heard other people not be fit or not happy with themselves or whatever has caused them to get to that point. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it's like the blame is cast on somebody else, even though it's something wrong inward. It's like, well, those people, all they care about is how they look. All the, you know, it's like, well, maybe they do, but I would be willing to bet my next 10 paychecks that they feel better than you do right now. I'm not saying that going to the gym is going to help your problems. There may be some deep seated things you need to work on, but it's not going to hurt your problems, you know?
And I think that's often when we shift accountability to somebody else in whatever the topic is. It's usually, not that I'm a therapist, but I just play one on TV. It tends to be a deflection, right? So we don't actually address our own stuff.
Sure.
And it's hard. And honestly, I often like getting those people as clients. Like if they get to me, we're in a good place because they've decided it's worth spending some money to work with me. They at least have gotten themselves that far and committed to that at least. But it's also an industry, I think, that it's so easy to feel shamed, whether you're skinny, whether you're overweight, whether you're too muscular. I mean, everyone's too something, apparently, right? God forbid we're just human and doing the best we can. in a world full of so much information, people don't know what to do with it.
Gotcha. Right?
And so I often, I do all my work is one-on-one for that reason. Like I really, there's tons of great programs that are group programs out there for nutrition, for training that work great for tons of people. That's awesome. Those aren't the clients that I want. Like I want the people who it's a little more they're willing to do a little more of the work and have the conversations sometimes with me, but more so with their self about why they've had to come to me for help. Right. And to take away a lot of the shame and the blame and the judgment around themselves in the food, in the nutrition. And it's hard if your family isn't supportive. Like I've had more than one occasion where one of the questions in my questionnaire is, do you have a support system?
Yeah.
And on more than one occasion, the answer has been no.
Yeah.
And it's not my place to comment on that. That just lets me know, okay, I'm the support system here. I'm the only support system here for this person. Okay.
Gotcha.
So I'm always aware of that period, but especially if I know they don't have other people, it's really important for me to know that because the process is hard. Even when it's easier, it's still hard, right? It's still work.
Sure.
You're seeking someone's expertise, because they know more. And especially when it comes to nutrition, there's rarely is why we eat the things we eat about the food. So it can be, but often when there's challenges, it's less about the actual food.
Sure.
And more about the why.
So how long have you been in this industry, in the health and wellness?
Like 22 years.
Oh, so just a short period of time.
Just a clip. Yeah. my original plan, I actually wanted to be a pediatrician. That was what I was so sure I was going to do. I grew up taking care of kids, tutoring, nannying, grew up in a house of art and science. My dad was a biology and botany professor for the latter half of my life. The first part, he was actually a photographer and owned a camera store. I grew up singing and dancing. I played sports, loved science. My name, Zamia, is actually one of the oldest living plants. So people are like, oh, where are you from? I'm like, yeah, there's nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
Although when I say California, somehow that justifies my name being weird. But gotcha. Okay, whatever. So I grew up in all of that. And I loved science. I mean, I loved art and theater and dancing and singing and all of it as well. But when I got to school, I really liked science and I loved kids. I liked the idea of happy kids, healthy kids. So pediatrics was what I decided. It was my first year of college, it was marine biology or pediatrician. Those were like, that was what I was fluctuating between. And medicine, I love the human body. And so went that route, finished college, knew I wasn't going to get into medical school right out of school, out of college. So was like afraid to not be in school. I love school. So an easy transition. I got my master's degree in physiology. And I'm like, okay, great foundation for medicine, all the systems of the body. And about halfway through my graduate degree, I suddenly changed my mind a little bit. And I always told myself if I wasn't 100%, I wasn't doing it. And no backup plan because I was sure that's what I wanted to do. And finished graduate school. And that was when I was 25, came home, thought I was spending 2 years getting myself ready to go to PA school, physician's assistant, which was the solution to why I had changed my mind on being a doctor, got into training as an in-between. So I had a job that somewhat made sense to going into that. And 22 years later, this is how I like to practice medicine. I knew I was going to butt heads with traditional medicine at the time because I'm not a write a prescription person. So I already knew there was going to be a set of challenges. And when I got into this, I realized it was easier for me to impact someone's behaviors because I'm seeing them multiple times a week. We're talking about nutrition. We're talking about movement. We're talking about stress. We're talking about sleep. We're talking about breathing, all of the things that are important. And we're doing it multiple times a week. So there's follow through. There's not just, I see you when something's wrong or once a year. Right. So
yeah,
it's getting a client off of medication. Some medications may have to be there forever, but many don't if you're willing to do the work. And not everyone is, and that's okay. But if you are, I like to help and hopefully make it at least somewhat fun.
Sure. And yeah.
I mean, I've definitely had a class where like, I'm never going to love training the way you do. I'm like, that is totally fine. As long as you kind of like it a little bit and stay, we're good.
Sure. So when did you decide to, because you were with, another gym.
I got hired by, am I allowed to say them? I don't, Equinox. So I worked for Equinox. Okay. I got hired from them right basically out of grad school. I interviewed and I was so fortunate. The manager who was basically going to hire me came from a very similar background. He was going to go to medical school. He didn't like, so we had a lot of overlap in storyline, and it was very upfront. Irony of my life. I'm like, this is not what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. I'm all these things. Like, whatever I say no to is that ultimately what ends up happening. But I was like, this is not for my forever job. I'm just going to be here for a few years while I get ready for medical school. But you 110% of me when I'm here, I'm not so many slacks off. So I was with them for much longer than I planned, 14 and a half years. And in that time frame, about 5 years in or somewhere in there, some time frame, I was like, what's happening, Zay? Because my dad, who's no longer alive, but at the time he was, he's like, what's going on with PA school? Is that still happening? I was like, oh yeah, yeah, it's totally, I'm still going. And I was totally dragging ass on getting things moving for that. And then at a point I was like, what is going on, Zaymia? Why you are dragging ass on this, which is not how you normally operate. And I just kind of realized, I'm like, I really love what I'm doing. I love coming to work. I was also very good at saying no. So my schedule worked well for me in terms of being fresh. I had the weekends off. Like again, when I started, I was like, I don't work weekends. So it was like, I had some very clear lines. I'm like, I don't work weekends. I'm here a half day Friday, but I'm here as much as necessary Monday through Thursday and half day Friday. I will do what's expected of me in that time frame. Because I wanted to have time to myself, be with friends, family, come back. I wanted to come back every Monday. And so I was with them for 14 and a half years, learned tons with them, found outside sources of information as well, and still have friends today that I worked with. And we're still colleagues and friends. And finally, when I was turning the year I turned 40, I was like, I'm done. I'm finally ready to not do it this way anymore. And I want to be able to call all the shots. I don't need to waste my time doing things, being someone who does everything that's asked of them. I'm like, I don't need to sit in a meeting once a week. Like,
sure.
This meeting isn't for me. It's for some of the other people who aren't ever doing what they're supposed to be doing. Right. And I just, things were shifting with how they were operating. And I was like, yeah, it doesn't line up with how I want things to be for me. So I, got my ducks in a row and gave them notice and had this beautiful transition, left on a good note, like it wasn't anything nasty. I left, went to Costa Rica with a friend who had like an Ironman there. She's like, do you want it? I'm like, yes, perfect. So like went to Costa Rica. Nothing crazy happened. It was just a beautiful little transition, and then came back in good human fitness, hit the ground running.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's been lovely.
I was just thinking about this the other day. Really, I don't know why my brain is wired, but I just cannot work for anybody else. Like I can't. I've done it. I've excelled at it. But it's usually in about a 2 or 3, maybe a 4 year window. And I will self-sabotage. I will be doing so well. And there's something in me that I can't stand it. And so many people like have these dreams or that, they like, what if, oh, it would be nice or something like that. And I mean, working for yourself is not for everybody. It's difficult. There's so much uncertainty surrounding it, mm-hmm. but when you have the ability to do it and you succeed in it, even if it's like not to the amount, if we want to, you know, quantify a dollar value that you make with other companies, that win is just astronomically better. Because it's I think it's compounded by a lot of the struggles that it takes to do it on your own. Because when you are the boss, when you are the face of the company, when you are the every phone call, the disgruntled clients, yeah, the everything, when you're that person, it's like that's a lot of stress on a human being. But then when you have those good moments, mm-hmm, it's like, fuck, that's what it was for. Like, yeah, that's why I did it. And even if it would be way easier to sit back at that desk in that office and do whatever job, you know, I could be making more money and I could punch in at 9 and clock out at 5. It's like, for me, I'm almost 40. I'll be turning 39 this year. And I've had multiple companies throughout my life, and some of them have done really well and some of them have crashed and fucking burned. And every time I usually land back with somebody, I just need a job. I got to make some money. I got to survive. But then you get into it and you're like, I was not designed for this. This is not who I am. And it's like, I got to go. And so many people have looked at me and been like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, you're leaving a job that people seek for and you have it and you excel at it. Like, what are you doing? And I'm like, it's not for me, man.
You're making yourself happy is what you're doing, sure, right? Like, I mean, and that's not a trivial thing though, right? You're also ultimately, in my opinion, more successful when you're enjoying what you're doing, right? I mean, if you're someone who is just so money driven, do your thing, mm-hmm, right? If that's really where your motivation is and you don't care about the other stuff, cool, right? But when that's not you, and especially if you're someone who does what you're supposed to do, when you work for a company and you find yourself spending a lot of time doing things, you're like, I don't need to be doing this to still do everything they want me to do or to be successful, even in just your job, removing the money part of it, right? Like, that was for me. I was like, I only want to be spending my time and energy at this point doing what I need to be doing. And there's a big chunk of stuff that doesn't fall into that when I'm sure in the other situation, right? Yeah. And it's not that I was miserable, but I'm like, it's just, it is a waste of my time. And when I was younger, it was fine, right? But now I just turned 47 in January. So obviously this was a little while ago in 2017 when I started this. But when I was 40, I was like, I think I'm like the only person who's excited for 40. I was like, fuck yeah, this is going to be an awesome year. Like, out of everything, like, I just knew it was. And it was, everyone's like, were you scared? I'm like, no. I'm like, I knew I would be fine. I didn't just quit and not have a plan. I talked to other people who had started their own business and I listened to advice. I'm always good at listening to advice before I get into a thing. Hopefully following it decently well as well. But like, I made sure certain things so I didn't quit. And then I was like, oh shit, I didn't think about that. Like,
gotcha.
You know, things that maybe seem silly, but I made sure I had health insurance because I had a great situation there. That made sure I had health insurance signed up. You know, 401k stuff now isn't there. So handling that kind of stuff and even insurance for my business, making sure it's an LLC, right? Like all those little things, recognizing that it's probably going to be slow for a while. You know, a couple people may come with me, but then I need to build that up, make that allotment for myself mentally and financially, right? And I don't have a family, but especially when you have a family, mm-hmm, wasting time when you could be with them, right? I mean, we don't get time back. It's the one thing we don't get back, right? We can't, mm-hmm, do anything about it if it's missed. So
yeah,
hopefully the older we get, the more we value it and prioritize, yeah, it in the places that it truly matters most.
Well, it's,
and
so cliche.
Ourself is not a bad, yeah, one either.
It's cliche and you hear it all the time, but it's like, yeah, time is fleeting and you don't realize it. You think you're superhuman, yeah, when you're younger, and then you start knocking on that door a little bit like, oh man, it is. But going to your point, you would rather be spending the time with the people that you love or that you want to be around.
Yeah, and just doing the things that you want to be doing.
Sure, sure. And if I'm going to spend time working, it's going to be for me or for the betterment of my family. And that was always the big deal. Like, you know, I was with BP and I had an amazing job. I could have easily retired there. I have friends that have already retired and they don't have to work anymore. But it just, you know, I felt like I was giving too much of my physical being to something that I didn't actually align with. And then I started thinking about it, like, it was hard for me to at that time when I left BP, so this would have been the end of 2020. And this was kind of my second iteration of going back to work for them. And, you know, it's going to be different. And you convince yourself of all this bullshit and it's not, it's the same damn company.
The they might have done a rebrand.
Yeah. Yeah. So the red tape is still there. But then, you know, I found myself like wanting to like, you know, kind of like give my kids like a hoorah speech, you know, like it's like, I know you don't have kids, but, when they like ask you something, especially like when that very, very young, like imaginative stage where mm-hmm. you want to like inspire them to do something. And like, you're sitting there trying to have this conversation of like, you know, inspire them to do what? Go sit at a fucking desk. Like how yeah. inspirational is that? Are there any movies made of anybody sitting at a desk? I mean, there are, I'm being facetious, but you know,
I'm not like, usually the character you want to be though.
Yes. You know? So I was like, I felt like, boy, I'm like trying to tell them like, you can do anything you want in this world. You know that, right? And they're like, what do you want to do, Dad? Like, not this fucking job.
You know, who is this pep talk for?
Yeah. So yeah, in a weird way, I guess I was pep talking myself, but, I did find myself kind of coaching myself out of a position and it was weird. But at the end of the day, you look back on it and, the second iteration of me going back to work for BP was driven by a major failure in a company that I had. And I had to underbid a job by so many thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars. It, you know, I had like crash and burn, shut it down, file bankruptcy. So I was like just trying to like breathe right. for a second. But then once you start breathing okay and all of a sudden you're financially solvent, you're like, I still don't want to do this. Yeah, I'm going to take another risk.
And that's okay, right? Like things can be a means to an end. And I mean, that was my graduate degree. People are like, oh, you're going to get your PhD. I'm like, you could not pay me enough.
Yeah.
I'm like, absolutely not. And I think, I don't even know where some of the things that lessons I learned, I'm not even sure where they came from, but I somehow figured out really early in life that I didn't ever want to spend a significant amount of time anywhere that I didn't enjoy being. It was not worth it. A means to an end is one thing, but beyond that, like this shouldn't be an open-ended situation. Hmm. And that was graduate school for me. It was a very good experience. I learned a lot. I got some publications total. Not at all what I imagined I would be doing for those 3 years, but a really good experience. And it also had an end, like it was a means to an end for me. I thought medical school was the end, but apparently this was the end, which is fine. But I was the whole time, I'm like, never, I would much rather spend a little more time getting to where I'm going to be than get to where I don't want to be sooner and get stuck there. Because you see that a lot. And especially with a lot of the clientele I used to have, it seemed like too many of them were in that situation where they financially were very successful and it started early, which is why they were doing so well. But they just didn't always seem all that happy and didn't feel at that point that they could leave. And whether or not
they had built a life around.
Yep.
Maybe the money of that scenario.
I think sometimes both and, you know, like, and especially when there's a family, that's a whole other level of challenge, right? Because it's not just you that you're taking care of, even if there's two incomes. And I just, that's always been my advice. Even when I was graduating college, I remember speaking to freshmen and just like, that was my message. I was like, I don't really know if this is what the faculty want me saying to you guys, but, Much like why I would never have been a good membership advisor at the gym, because I'd be like, listen, is it worth the money? I don't know. What's important to you? Sure. Like, it's, you know, but it's like, take the classes. If you don't like it, sweet. Finish it. Move on. Don't take that subject again. Like, are you going to know what you want to do when you get out of college? Probably not. Unless you know you want to be a lawyer, know you want to be a doctor, something along those lines, probably not. Follow the path of interest of classes and you might find something you're like, ooh, that's really interesting. Let me go a little more in that direction. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's, I'm such a big advocate of trying the things, and much like in research, though it's never the answer someone wants, no is still a piece of the puzzle, right? No, I don't like this. Okay. Check. Moving on. You don't need to go that direction anymore, right? That's still part of your puzzle of life.
Yeah.
And so going in the direction of the things you feel drawn to or you try and really enjoyed, cool. And I think, totally kind of going off on a tangent here, but I want people to be as happy as they can be and feel like they have the choice, even in the stuff that they do with me. Like, it's important. And I'm going to totally come full circle with this. Nutrition is a perfect example of you want to enjoy what you're doing, right? And people are like, when it comes to food, well, I have to, I'm like, you don't have to eat any way you don't want to eat. Given the changes you want, these are the things I would recommend more or less of. How do we incorporate this? Like, it's got to work, right? It's got to be sustainable. And having a good realization with your coach or yourself, depending on the situation, like, okay, let's be realistic about what that means. Set appropriate expectations. Okay, so this is a little more of a long game than anyone ever wants when it comes to changing their body, at least, let alone the bigger picture of life, right? But that's okay. Like, spend a little more time enjoying what you're doing and getting to where you want to be and keeping it and staying there, instead of this yo-yo of going hard, falling off, going hard, falling off, right? Whether it's making money and not, and, you know, whatever it is, like, I'd much rather everyone spend a little more time getting to where they want to be than to getting to where they don't want to be quickly and feeling stuck.
Very well said. Did your dad support you not going to PA school?
He would have. He passed before I realized it. The whole medical thing was all me. Like, I was never pushed by anybody. Okay. I thankfully was always very supported in whatever. Be happy, be able to take care of yourself. Those were kind of the guidelines. More than anything, I don't think he would have cared what I did. I'm sure he loved that I love science, since that was a big part of him. So we got to bond a lot over that. I definitely got my dad's eye with photography, which is kind of nice. This picture, if you can see it behind me, it's hard to tell. That's Montana from a road trip I took. Yeah. Nice. It's a lot of my photos that are stuff I've taken, and I know I got some of my dad's eye, which is beautiful to kind of see. And even people are like, oh my God, you have your dad's eye. I'm like, yes. yeah. So he didn't know, and he didn't really care. He just wanted his kids to be happy.
That's good.
Happy and be able to take care of themselves. So,
do you think I guess my parents, growing up, I'm just trying to think, they were never like, you know, do good in school, get a good job, marry the right girl. You know, they were never,
right.
That was never that. I think they were still sort of figuring out life when I was growing up. But I did have friends that their parents were very much like, school, then you go to college, then you get a job, and then you get married, and then you have, you know, it's like, it's all, this is part of the American dream, the plan, right? And I wonder if that type of mentality or, I guess, parental guidance is kind of waning in a sense, you know, because we have a younger generation. I'm just curious. Like, it doesn't sound like you were raised like that. It was kind of just do what you want to do as long as it makes you happy. I was raised similar, you know, just you know, no staunch, like, do this, do that. But, you know,
right.
I just don't hear people being like, well, you know, my parents said, and it's, so it's less like, I wonder if it's going away, you know, it's just interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, in some ways I feel so far removed from it. I think some of it is very cultural. Like, it was interesting, a number of years ago, I went and spoke at my high school to the sophomores. It was usually their stuff for juniors and seniors, but this was like a sophomore career thing. And again, I'm like, I'm probably saying what they don't want me to say, but whatever. But some of these kids, and so let me lay the foundation. This was a prep school. I was a kid on financial aid that was there. I was not the kid driving around in a BMW. There were plenty of those. So this was a mixed bag of kids that were there. And I was one of the kids that was work study, financial aid, worked for a family. Like, I was that kid there. So again, just coming into it in a different space. But when I went and spoke to these kids, again, mixed of all the things, there was definitely some trends from certain cultural backgrounds that I was seeing with these kids had their whole lives laid out. They were sophomores. And they were like, yeah, I'm getting this. I'm going to major in this. I was like, can you be like 15?
Yeah.
I realize it's a little different and getting in everywhere is just harder and all of those things, but it in some ways it kind of broke my heart. Cause I'm like, are these kids even having fun? You can learn and have fun. I loved high school. Learned tons. I was a great student. I loved it. Right. Like, yes, being in school was great because I also enjoyed it, but and so again, even the conversation with my dad, I'm like, I love school. So he probably didn't feel the need to even have to say it. Cause I was like, so I'm going to study this. Like, yeah. But I also had fun and I had breath to all of it too. Like, thankfully I grew up in such a balanced house of art and science that I felt very free to explore all of the topics. I definitely had things I liked more and I wanted to major in biology, but I also took a singing class when I got to college. I actually wanted to minor in dance, but that was totally out the window where I went to college. But I got a dance class in and I took English classes and I took a music class and I was still majoring in science. I mean, on paper, I was a total science nerd. I majored in biology and I minored in chemistry. I mean, it doesn't get more science nerd than that, sure. but like, I was still being the age I was. And like, it was definitely interesting when I did that thing at my high school. Cause I was just like, wow, you guys are sophomores and you're like already 25 in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you're in medical school and you and your fellowship. I'm like, what?
Like, it's
16.
Yeah. And that's a crazy thing to think about because, you know, I thought at one point in my life, you know, I kind of just had it figured out. Like, things were going very well with my previous company. You know, I was legitimately, it was a $1 million company. I was doing very well. I had the brilliant purple boat on the lake and it was awesome. And we had a brand new baby and life on the outside looked really good. And then all of a sudden it's like a hiccup and it's gone. I hate to even say it this way, but it's like, cause I do think that it's missed on a lot of people because when you're younger, you don't want to hear somebody who's your elder tell you how it's done because they have to fail. They have to,
right.
It's a rite of passage to have failures to become versed in those things. So you can no longer, and I'm sure that those will happen from 40 to 60 there. Yeah. I know that it's going to happen, but at least now I'm wiser to it. But being almost 40, it's like I'm finally maybe kind of figuring some stuff out a little bit, you know, where it's like I've become okay with certain things happening or not being in my control or, mm-hmm. you know, and realizing like, hey, the biggest thing is like, it's not going to go to plan, you know? It's like it was written that way for a reason. The best laid plans often go awry, you know? Right. And those are the things when you're young, you don't have enough track record to just know that it's going to. So as much as I don't agree with paying for somebody to go to college to have a party,
right.
I'm like, you should at least maybe not pay $100,000 to go party. You can do that on the weekends for free with your buddies, right. But it's experience some life because it going back to it, right? I don't know if this is full circle or not, but there is so little of it. And we never know. We all know that it's coming, but we're trying to extend it as long as we can, but it could be done tomorrow. Well, and we're always...
No, go ahead.
I was just saying, we're always worried about the future. And we're quick to forget the past, right? We're worried about what could we get here? What could we get here for so many different reasons? Whether it could be a commodity, it could be whatever, but we are so... We're cognizant of the fact that we're going to die. Everybody is aware of that, but we put blinders, we block it out.
Yes.
Because who wants to sit here and think about when you're going to die? You know, it's like we have a life to live. But what we don't do is we don't remind ourselves that it could happen tomorrow. So make the most of your environment, of your body, of your vessel now. Yeah, because if it's gone, then, you know, it's gone.
It's very much the being present, right? And being in the moment. And that doesn't mean dismissing the past and ignoring the future, but not having those be the places you spend your current time mostly, right? Like, yeah, they're part of the equation. And I think for myself, because I had an unusual amount of death early in my life. So my mom passed away when I was 4. And then my grandfather, who I was extremely close to, passed away when I was 8. And then there were some kids who passed away and like stuff that is a little less normal. And then friends as a young adult had some death. And then when I was 29, my dad passed away. And then a few months after that, his mom, my only grandparent, passed away, who I was very close to. And I basically had to tell her he was still alive. Like she was in a nursing home and I became the person caring for her. And so I had this unusual amount of death in my life by the time I was 29. And I can't help but think that partially because of that and just however I'm wired, because I'm clearly very positive person and that's great. I wish I could share why, but I mean, it's just, people ask me like, why are you always so happy? I'm like, why are you always not? Like, I don't know. I think we are wired a certain way. Right. But I think the value of life became very when I was 4, like I didn't have, that's too young to get it in terms of death. And thankfully my dad was an amazing single parent. Like he raised 2 kids and so much love, so much support and found other people who were lovely that have been in our life. And I think I just very early on had this sense of appreciation for life and that it is short and it can be. I grew up in a house of I love you and hugs too, which I realize is not everybody. And I'm so grateful for that. And I think just a combination of all of that, like I just at a relatively young age started having this awareness that a lot of things didn't matter, that maybe you don't think about in that way at that age. And even something as seemingly trivial as getting into college, like I was getting rejected everywhere I was applying. And I was like, okay, what am I going to do? Right. Like, I don't need to get into the story of why that happened, but clean some stuff up with my application. I went into my college counselor and I was like, who still has openings? Where can I apply? Like, I'm like, a year from now, this isn't going to matter. I'm going to be somewhere. It's going to be fine. You know, like everyone's like, why aren't you freaking out? I'm like, there's something I can do about it. Like,
yeah,
you know, so I need to do that thing and I'll be somewhere. I'm not stupid. I'll get in somewhere. And even if it has to be a community college, I'll start there and then I'll transfer out. Like I'll be somewhere in a year. It won't matter. And you know, I think there's something to be said for being able to get there sooner. And I realize like you can't force that on anybody, but I do think for myself that given all of that death, there was this weird, beautiful kind of overlay a little sooner than often is the case with what matters and what doesn't, and saying, I love you. And not, I mean, sure, there's stress and there's worry, but I somehow realized to not spend a lot of my energy there because it didn't do anything.
Sure.
And maybe it's also because my grandmother was like the biggest worry wart. And like I recognized that really young.
She did enough worrying for both
of us. Oh my God. Yeah. I'm like, okay, don't be like that. It doesn't do anything. She's just stressing everyone out. I love her to death. We had an amazing relationship. But I was always very aware of that, even as a kid. And, you know, and I think sometimes recognizing those things that don't seem good at a young age and you're able to somehow figure that out is helpful. And I think just because of all of that death, it's somehow just made me realize a little earlier, okay, what matters, what doesn't, what can I do about this? If I can't, I can't. Okay. Out of my control. Right. And I love you. I'm hugging you. I'm coming to visit you. Right. Like my brother lives on the East Coast, and ever since my first nephew, who is 16, which is insane, was born, like I have two nephews. Ever since the first one was born, I was there for every birthday, and then 3 or 4 times a year total, I would visit. And once I became my own boss, I'm like, I don't want to have to fucking ask permission to go visit my family.
Yeah.
Like, this is silly. And if you're not going to prove it, are you kidding? So again, being your own boss, spending your time and energy where it means most to you. So like, that's what's important to me. Do I want to move back there? I love them, but no, don't want to move there, but that's what airplanes are for. And that's what matters, right? Seeing all of their birthdays, especially when they were younger. COVID was the first year I missed a birthday. And I think I was more bummed because at that point they were kind of like teenagers, but.
Sure.
And I was like, oh, I've never missed a birthday since you were born. But yeah, I mean, I think if we can, and again, it's hard. There's so many more factors for so many people, and it's not always that easy. But I think if we can, and I say this to clients too, I'm like, when you come to a space in life and a decision needs to be made about something, whether it seems kind of trivial or it's a really big decision, if ahead of time you can kind of answer some questions for yourself, what's most important to me? What do I value most? And at the end of the day, what am I doing this all for? Coming back to those answers, assuming you are honest in your answers, and those don't usually change as we get older. I mean, when you're younger, it's one thing, but as an adult, those are kind of relatively set answers. And I find that that can often help when you're having a hard time making a decision about something. Because it can be something that in the moment you're like, oh, yeah, I want to do that. And going back to the getting off track, right? If you go back to that and you answer those questions I just said, or even just what matters most to you and what do you value most, if you come back to those answers, my guess is somewhere they weren't actually getting answered the way you want in that space and time when you kind of got off track. And it's not always easy, like, because the thing can seem in the moment like a good thing, but if it's actually pulling you further away from whatever your goals are, even if it's just like a body goal, let alone your values and what matters most to you and why you're doing life, right? Often I think those kind of questions can be really helpful. Not necessarily make it easier to do the thing you want to be doing, but at least be like, oh, does this action line up with those answers? Not really. Right. And like, it's not always that clear, but I have found often that can be helpful, especially when you are in this space, but even in just trying to figure out why you got off course with whatever the thing is. Coming back to those sometimes and you look at the decisions that were made and again, try to be judgment free in it. Were those choices actually resulting in those answers to those big questions? It's not, I mean, life is challenging, right? Life is all of the things, but I think if we can be honest with ourselves, right. And try to remove the judgment and find the people who support us, right. And the version of us, that's there, even the version that maybe isn't always amazing, right? Because we aren't 100% lovely all the time. But having the people who accept us that way, we feel comfortable being ourselves with, right? Because we don't feel like we're going to get judged, but be supported. Yeah. I think all of that's so important to find that, even if it's just one person, even if it's just your spouse, right? Even if it's just your best friend, even if it's just your sibling. Hopefully it's more than that. But I think all of those things are so important. And I think this day and age too, I just feel like there's a lot of that lacking.
People supporting one another.
Yeah.
No, it's okay. Yeah.
It's, you know, I think it's funny because social media is such an interesting thing. And I'm not the first person to say this at all, but like in some ways we're more connected and so less connected. Right. And it's for me, and I think a lot of other people at this point, we've kind of found that recipe of dealing with social media in a way that works for us well, because amazing things can happen. You can meet wonderful people, right? Sure. And make connections that you never would have had otherwise. But it shouldn't stop here, right? Like if you really are friends with this person, it should be more than just this. And if it's not, don't put it in that category as that either, because then you're setting an expectation of association to it that it's not, right? And that just leads to disappointment.
And just like everything too, and I've only seen tiny glimpses of this with a little bit of success with this podcast, and it's not successful on the scale of others that really are successful. But there are people that I'm friendly with, but to your point, that doesn't mean we're friends. And right. They could be on the same comment, of people that I also know on social media that I'm genuinely friendly with, and that some of them, you know, I've given them a physical hug. I've happened to meet them in person, and I can easily say, man, I love you, dude. Like
right.
A genuine relationship. And some people, I feel like, there's a line, there's a boundary there. And those are good metrics to have in place of like, you know, this relationship is not meant to be real life at this moment.
Right.
Not that it wouldn't ever be, or that I wouldn't want to take it there, but just because you've listened to me for 6 days of audio, you know, right. Like these are hour and a half. Unfortunately, I don't know you, you know what I mean?
Right.
And that's kind of been a weird dynamic a few times that I've had to navigate of like, hey, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Like, yeah, we could absolutely meet up one of these days. And, you know, and it's not, I'm not trying to not be friendly, but I also want to sometimes make people aware, like, hey, the relationship's not there yet. You know, like I appreciate your love for the show. I appreciate your comments. I appreciate you sharing it. But like, we don't know each other, Bubba.
Well, I think I can totally see how that can happen too, because if they're constantly listening to you, right, it feels like they know you more because you're sharing all these things and they're hearing you with all these other speakers, right? So it's this one-sided conversation that they're having with you.
Yeah, right? But it's trippy when somebody reaches out to you and they say, how's Jonah doing? And I'm like, who? How do you know my kid? And they're like, well, you talked about him on the podcast a billion times. Like, okay. And it makes me go, do I need to not talk about my son? Right. You know?
I can only imagine that that's for both the listener and you, right? Like I'm blunt is often easier. Like you got to check yourself, right? Like,
sure.
And not in a bad way, but like, oh, right. I've listened to him on 12 podcasts. I said, hey, once, and he said, hey, back. Okay. He doesn't actually know anything about me, the listener.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I can see how that would really easily, I mean, it's like a famous person, right? You feel like you know them, right? Sure. I can't believe they did that. Why? You don't actually know them. Right.
Yeah. And exactly.
But they can Google and know everything about you. Right. Yeah. So I imagine it's similar. And
it's, I should say it's never been inappropriate.
Now, I wasn't even thinking that, but just this like someone thinking you guys are a little friendlier than you are just because they know more about you.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then I'm super open on the, and like, there's been times where I've gotten really deep and talked about very, very personal things. And I want to be honest with people. I want people to know, like, this is me being genuine. But you know, there it's, and it's not that I'm not trying to be a friend of yours down the road, but a comment, we're just being friendly, man. We're not friends. So that's been a strange thing. And the other thing that has been wild with social media is that I have some legitimate dear friends, in real life and on social media. And what I've seen is, like, now that we're getting a little bit of longevity to this podcast, you know, I think we're at 65 or something episodes, but, you know, like, you'll have like day one fans that are hoorahing for you. And they're like, man, I love it. Everything's good. They share it. They like it. And then come episode 60, you put something out there and it's like, they didn't agree with it. And then they'll, in three instances now where it's like, it's legit friends. Like, if I see them at the gas station, I'm going to give them a hug.
Right.
But that relationship is almost like changed a little bit because of something, like, not that I said, or maybe it was I said, or but what a guest said. It's like, I'm curious to all things that matter. You know, it's like they don't align with it. And I'm like, I didn't ask you to align with it. And it's almost like, I feel like if I'm putting myself into their perspective, they're looking at it going, well, I don't align with that. How could you let that be on your show? And I'm like, I'm the same. This is the same show that's going to have like some you know, thing on this side of the spectrum, and then the next day it's on this side of the spectrum. And it's like, I think we're curious to all of it, and none of it's wrong. But I've experienced that where it's like, people were like, I loved your show, what are you doing? And then it's like, okay, don't listen anymore.
You know, it's an interesting thing. It's like, I mean, I just kind of feel like this is a lot of what's going on in the world, but it's, people agree with you when you agree with them.
Sure.
Right. And the second you don't, suddenly it's not okay. And presenting an idea doesn't necessarily mean you're saying it's right or wrong. It's just a discussion too. And I think the healthy thing to be able to do is, oh, let's talk about that. Let's have a conversation about why that bothered you so much.
Sure.
And where I was coming from when I had this person on my podcast, right? Instead of just being like, nope, right? Fired.
Yeah. Like, unfollow.
Yeah, like, literally, right? Like, especially, you know, if it's someone you know, like, has your track record been so bad that all of a sudden, because this was on your podcast, it's worth being like, I don't know if we're friends anymore.
It's one of those things, like, it does affect you because you're legitimately friends with them.
Yeah.
You live in the same town, you know, and then you kind of got to go, okay, I guess, you know what, if that little 60-second clip or that hour-long episode with a guest that you didn't align with or your beliefs were completely off, if that ruined the relationship, then I guess the relationship really wasn't that strong anyways. So that's kind of the perspective I've taken on it. And it's unfortunate because, you know, it's like, if I have a friend in the world, like if I know you just kind of casually and we're friendly out in public and I shake your hand or something like that. And then there's another level of friend where it's like, if I see them, I'm giving them a hug.
Right.
Wherever we're at, it doesn't matter. So these three individuals were the second, right? They were the friend that you're like, oh, I love you, man, genuinely. And I don't not love them anymore, but it's like, I've kind of been like, okay, well, you know what? If I upset you, I do apologize dearly. But if that's how you want to go, then I can't control that, you know? And I also can't let that affect what the show, you know what I mean? It's just like, I can't just like put out a Survey Monkey every week and be like, you know, hey guys, what topics do we want to talk about? You know,
right.
No,
it's like, your show. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
and were none of them open to actually having a conversation to maybe resolve that?
One of them was, but it was through a DM, and it was like, I went and answered his question on the comments. So, okay, you know, I'm not going to delete comments. They stay live. They're public forever. So I answered it in grave detail And then 2 days later, he deleted the comment section. So I was like, okay, whatever. So it is what it is. I can't lose sleep over it. 10 years ago, I probably would still be stressing it. But anymore, I think it's like, such is life.
And that kind of goes back to finding the people who support you, truly you, right? And I think especially this day and age, communication is such a lost art form between people, and being able to have a conversation that isn't an argument. Trying to understand somebody doesn't have to be an argument.
Yeah.
Asking questions to literally understand better is a good thing.
And not even trying, I have a great buddy that we've got another show we're trying to work on the side, but you know, he's one of my best friends in the world. Some of the things I could not agree with anymore that he says, but you know, the thing I'm always trying to tell him is like, if I ask you a question and I disagree with it, it doesn't even matter to the world for me to try and convince you of the way that I believe about it. It's your belief.
Right.
And we're going to learn something if we just have a genuine conversation. I'm not trying to change your mind or your opinion. It's like, that's your belief, man. Have fun at it. And so that's the thing. I couldn't agree with you more, is that the art and the ability to communicate with another person is at times lost.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a shame. But that's one of the big reasons why, even though like so many people like make fun of this show and like, what are you trying to be, Joe Rogan? I'm like, no, I'm not. I never will be the guy, you know.
Like, I feel like people say that to like everybody these days.
If you have a podcast, you're trying to be Rogan. But no, I do. I don't have a niche, and I don't want a niche, because my life is not like that. The real version of Kyle is not like that. I have friends from all walks of life, and they're all different. And the conversations I have with Joe Schmo over there is different than that. And so why would I want to be anything? Why would I want to come on here and talk about automotive parts all day, every day? You know,
like, how I would not enlisten, by the way.
Exactly. So I'm like, why we're not this niche. We're not, it's meant to be more than that. And that, what, but in that thing, in that realm of doing something that I think I enjoy, I understand that not everybody's going to like every single episode, and that's okay. But the only thing I disagree with is that, but that's what's being lost. If you can just tune out because you don't like this topic, then you're not understanding that we're trying to rebuild the point of conversation, right? That's what I'm trying to get at.
And I think it's so, disagreeing doesn't have to have hate or anger behind it, right? You can, I mean, this is a silly statement to agree with, but like, I love turquoise and all things this color. Like, you actually hate it? Okay, I noted, I won't ever get you anything that color unless it's like a joke gift, right?
Yeah.
Like, but it's, and I realize that's totally not important, but it's kind of a similar thing, especially where it doesn't change you as the person that they became friends with, right? I mean, I don't know what the topic was, but I'm assuming it wasn't something morally completely insane.
I do want to talk about because it was hilarious. So one of the topics was Mel Gibson, and we were making a joke. It was actually a missed reference from a guy that was, we had there was two people in the, so it was three people in the podcast. And that, when that happens, you constantly talk over each other. It just, and they were both drinking whiskey. So it was a bad joke. So it was missed by one of the other guys. And it couldn't have been more funny. And the guy, you know, somebody took it way too serious. And then the other one, I was poking fun at tipping. I thought it was hilarious. And this gentleman did not. And I was like, okay, what do you want me to, like, I'm sometimes you can't get a guest in. Sometimes you got to do a solo podcast that's totally idiotic. And I thought it was, hey, let's all get a laugh out of me being stupid for a second. And
or
it
not,
is
apparently.
Is. Yeah. Yeah. Or not. Oh God. So what, you know, you said something a bit earlier about, kind of, I can't really quite remember how you phrased it, but it was like, I wanted to know if you kind of keep that element around yourself. Like you were saying that, you know, you're not always going to get to your end result, or you think that it's better to get to your end result. It may take more time than getting there faster. But what you said is that this is your end. So Good Human Fitness is your end, and you're happy with that. But what I was curious is that same thought and process that kind of led you to here, do you still sort of hold that? Because, I mean, in all reality, you have a lot of life left.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
So I think I may have been a little too definitive when I said that. I love what I do. I've never felt burnt out from what I do, which is not common in this space. But I also allow for the possibility of it to morph into another version of this. I mean, I don't think I'm suddenly going to pick some random thing that's totally not this, do that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to like have some 180 in what I do unless somehow traveling the world, hiking and tasting everyone's coffee is something I could get paid for. Unless that becomes a paying job, I'll probably always be doing something professionally, at least like this in some realm. It may switch a little bit, even from when I worked for Equinox. The version of this I do now is different in terms that when I was there, everything was in person, right? That's how it operates in that setting. And now even in this version of this chapter of this profession for me, I do have in-person clients, but I also have online clients.
Okay.
In terms of not like a virtual session, but I design programs for people to do on their own, but still customized for them in their life, which is not something I ever thought I would do. But I added that in so I could work with other people and free up my time because I love to travel. And another part of my business is the microcurrent point stimulation, which is a recovery from life tool. This is where I have to choose my words wisely, that I can help people recover from things like scar tissue that's causing problems, brain trauma, TBI, concussions, low back pain, so many things. And with that, in this part of my business now, I can have that as a standalone service, but I can also travel to do it. Like I wasn't doing that when I worked for them. So like I've traveled to other states to visit friends and we've had them help me find a bunch of people who wanted a session with this so I could help them feel better and help them with stuff that's been an issue. And I get to visit my...
What does that look like?
So the device or the...
Physical device?
Okay. So it's a physical device. Technically it's a TENS unit, but it's very... Okay. I should have brought it over. It's very different from what people are used to. Usually it's like a pad that people are familiar with. Mm-hmm. This, it's two devices and it comes to a very fine point. And a lot of the protocols are based off of acupuncture points. So it administers a very, very low current that's very similar to our body's natural current. And it's very much about down-regulating our sympathetic nervous system and up-regulating our parasympathetic nervous system. So our body is in a state to heal. When you're sympathetically up-regulated, which is kind of everyone these days, right? That's where your fight or flight. So your body is, I don't want to die. It doesn't care about healing or fixing pain. It just cares about not dying. And so this is very much about quieting that down so the body is in a state to actually heal itself. And so it's amazing. And I get to travel now to do that. That was something 10 years ago, I wasn't even doing it. And so I definitely am open to the idea that how I help people live a better quality of life will shift and morph. There'll probably be always some component of this. The nice thing with that device is when I work with somebody, I have low back pain, say, and so we do stuff around that. Given my training background and my nutrition background, if they're open to it, we can have a conversation about, okay, these are foods that promote inflammation. These are foods that don't. If you feel like changing your diet in any capacity, try adding more of these and maybe having less of these. Or if I give you one homework movement-wise to do to support what we just did for your back, is that something you'd be open to? Cool. Here's your one homework exercise, right? So it's this whole other venue of helping people. And physical pain, when we fix that, mentally things shift, of course.
Drastically. Yeah, right? Are they micro sessions? Like, are they 30-minute, an hour long?
They're an hour minimum, generally. Sometimes they're longer. So in that part of my business, I have a pro bono group of folks who are active military veterans and first responders. And so often with them, those sessions tend to go longer. But like, I have a friend who is a veteran and like I've done concussion on him. And I mean, everyone, this is by no means limited to that population, but so many people have gone through concussions. And unless you've had like a significant one that doctors deem worthy enough to diagnose and label, people don't do anything about it, right? Let alone if you have. And a lot of what's out there isn't easily accessible, either physically getting to or financially for the average person. And so this has been a beautiful thing for me to help people with who under other circumstances didn't know how to help it, didn't have the money to help it, didn't have the access. And it's not really painful. There can be moments of discomfort, but overall it's not a painful process. And in the moment, you generally notice a difference. So especially for somebody who's been kind of living in a state of accepting their life is going to be with this pain, to have that pain diminished or removed, even if it's temporary, we know it's changeable.
Sure.
Right? If we got it to be less or we got it to go away, it clearly isn't something you have to live with forever. It's a little more complicated than just this one session probably, but it's changeable. And that for someone who has accepted that it's their forever life is huge.
That's gotta be such a weight to just see it come off of people.
And we hold, you know, this is going to seem woo-woo to some people, but pain holds emotional trauma, right? There's always a connection to that. And I've had so many sessions where tears have happened and, you know, my job and goal is to create a space for anyone that I'm with in any setting, but especially in that situation where they feel safe, they feel like they can trust me, they can trust themselves, and they can be open to do, say, whatever is needed in that moment. I've had people share things that, especially I had a veteran who shared something with me. He's like, my wife doesn't even know that. And tears, you know, there's a lot comes out when you start addressing, especially in those populations though, why these injuries are there, right? Often it's been a loss of life of a brother, of a sister, right? At war, things like that. And so much, when we hold emotions and feelings and we don't address them, it literally can create physical pain. Aside from the actual physical pain from a traumatic event of some sort. But it's just so powerful to get somebody not only out of pain or in less pain, but to feel safe enough to talk about something, right? That is part of what's holding them back. And it's, I had one friend tell me I was going to stop training and doing nutrition and just do that for the rest of my life. And I'm like, I doubt it. I'm like, you never know. I have learned to not say never. But like that became a new part of my practice. And once I became my own boss, it could be a thing that's on its own. It can be an in session with a training client, but it's allowed to be its own thing now, which I love. Like I had a session with somebody who was just grieving the loss of her father. And I knew she would be very open to this situation of it and did vagus nerve stimulation with her and hit some calming points and just took her through some breathing and gave her permission to cry and scream and whatever needed to happen in that moment. And she did. and it doesn't change the situation, but letting yourself process that is so important. And she felt better afterwards, and her body just held less tension afterwards. So it's a really cool device.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. I got to do some more research on that.
I'll send you some information.
Awesome. That's such a powerful, I can only speak from my own experience. Like, I bottled things up for years. And then in Texas, and this was kind of around that same time, like I was joking earlier about, like, you know, coaching my kids, right? I was coaching myself had this moment, this absolute breakdown moment that was kind of triggered by a pretty sad country song, right? I'm like, and then next thing I know, I pulled over on the side of the road, and I'm just like a blubbering idiot, just bawling. And it was like 15 minutes of just cry, and then all of a sudden I felt like a little bit of shame of like, what are you doing? You know what I mean? But what was strange is that from that moment, that was in 2019, it's like, there's those times when I've allowed myself mentally to say, like, this is okay. There's no shame in this. Mm-hmm. And when you can give yourself the grace to just be so vulnerable, even if it's in a bathroom to where you just need to get that out. Like, I know that there's going to be guys that hear this, and this is not manly. Like, right? This is so far removed from everything that, you know, but from a person that did bottle that up, when I allowed myself to be free with, I think, going down that path of being really vulnerable and honest with myself and just crying. I don't know what the fuck I was crying about. Ashley McBride. It was crazy, you know, and I still think about that moment all the time. And it opened up, I think, a cavity that I had filled up for so long somewhere in my body, somewhere in my brain. And so now when I see things or I hear things that touch me, I can feel myself like getting to that state of like tearing up and crying. And I never would have done that for 35 years of my life, never. And so to hear you say, like, giving those people this space to just allow them the ability to go there and be comforting, and to be comforted from you, or just to be accepted. Mm-hmm. That's a huge thing. And that's more powerful than I think most people, at least that I interact on a daily, give it. And it is something that I can't explain it to people, but once you're met with that decision of like, you're on the tipping point, I'm just going to let go and I'm going to cry and I'm going to weep uncontrollably. You leave that and just finally you come back after those crazy, you know, quick breaths and you're like, oh my God, I needed that.
It's such an unfortunate thing that we have created crying. And I'm not saying that, I mean, crying also can be very intentionally and strategically used. But But there's a reason. I mean, we are human beings. We have all of these emotions, right? And I've had this conversation many times with a lot of the veterans that I've worked with, and active duty too, and first responders, right? Time and a place, absolutely. When you are out there, there is no time or place for that. Right? You've got to compartmentalize. You've got to do your thing. Like, life and death literally is on the line, and it's yours, or it's the person next to you, right? Like, lock that down. However, when that's all over, if you're not coming back to that, and I'm not saying you necessarily have to cry about things from that, but if you're not addressing what happened and the emotions around that, allowing yourself to go through that and feel that, because you can't feel it there. That makes sense to not let yourself. That just keeps piling up and piling up. And unfortunately, that's still a community largely, you know, you're weak if you have an emotion. I mean, right? If that, it's that conversation is slowly changing, but the number of folks that I've been with in a session, and because I've worked with enough now, I also, not remotely, I am very much a civilian, but I understand them a little bit more, so that when I am talking with one, they realize I actually get it a lot more than they think, especially like, oh, the girl from California, she's all happy and smiley and like sunshine, right? I'm like, I fucking get it.
Yeah.
Like, there's a reason you're my pro bono population. Not everyone is designed to do those things. And someone needs to care enough about you when you come back. Mm-hmm. Because yeah, a lot of who should doesn't. Mm-hmm. Right. And now I'm going to cry. If I can help provide a space of healing even a little bit with the physical, which is very connected to the mental and emotional, and they have the opportunity to trust it enough to share something that clearly needed to be shared, tears that clearly needed to cry, I am so honored that they take that opportunity and trust me enough. And I recognize how I am as a person. I'm so grateful that I am able to hold space the way I do and create a sense of trust so quickly with people, because I am limited to my ability to help if I can't do that.
Sure.
The more they trust me, the more quickly they trust me and feel safe, the more they share, the more honesty they give me, the more I can help in return. And it's been amazing. Like, I also joke about this. I'm like, I wish I was just independently wealthy, because I would just love to travel the world treating my pro bono population. And that I would drop the training and nutrition. And if that was like something I could do.
Sure,
and
sure.
Not everyone's open to it, and that's okay. Right. But those who have been, it's been a beautiful thing. And, yeah, and that will just continue for me, and probably expand more. We'll figure out me coming to Texas.
Sure. I mean, you touched on something just real quick, and you know, that I've had many ex-military on this show, and so many friends that would love to, but just are not capable of coming on the show. But the conversation is always, you're forgotten when you get back. Mm-hmm. And those men and women are designed to be pillars that we prop everything on. And that is, there's so much weight on those people. The one thing that I would love to say, if anybody hears this, is that we applaud you for believing that you have to carry that burden, like all the time, when active duty, you know, not active duty, retired, whatever. But if you need to let go of that, there's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't take away anything from your nature. It's not a sign of weakness, you know, and that's been a big thing, is like you said, is a lot of the people that I talk to, is it still is seen as weak. Yeah. But the ones that have reached out and gotten help from people, whatever treatment that's through, they see it with rose-tinted glasses. They're like, I'm not weak. I'm still the same person I was that I walked in the door. I just got rid of this burden for a second, and it made them so much more of a capable human being. I love what you're doing with that device. I'm not trying to say it's more important than anything with the health and fitness, but I love hearing the fact that that's a big, big deal. And it doesn't necessarily have to be military people. I appreciate that. But yeah, like, God, that's, hats off to you. That's such an amazing deal.
Thank you. No, I absolutely love it. I definitely am trying to grow that part of my business, because it's also, so many people don't know about it, and it's not actually that new, which is the crazy thing. It's been around now for probably 30 plus years. But it's, since I can travel with it, like it's so easy, and again, it's not very painful. It's usually very relaxing. And it's just to have people physically be in less pain, to just feel calmer. I worked on a friend who was a veteran, and I had worked on his back the first time. We were at this event that I go to every year, and I worked on his back, which was great. And the next year I was like, how's your back? He's like, good. He's like, can you do anything for anxiety? You know, not uncommon for that population to not be comfortable around tons and tons of people, especially when they're out of service, or even when they're in. So I literally, again, I said a lot of it follows acupuncture points. So I did the anxiety protocol and I hit a couple of added calming points. He was good the whole rest until like into the evening and could enjoy himself. Right. And that's so like just that, yeah, like it's wild and it's beautiful and everyone's like, it's magic. I'm like, okay. I'm okay if you think it's magic.
Zemi, do you have that magic device with you this time?
Right? Yeah. Yes, I mean, I literally travel everywhere with it. But especially that population, and just, I'm really grateful that I have trusted myself in the way that I do with being open. And it's okay if someone can't receive it. That's okay. I'm going to offer. And if they ever are, they know how to find me. And if they ever aren't, that's okay. They still know I care. It's always important for me that people feel that and trust it, because it's obviously people say things all the time. But I do, like, if I can make someone's life a tiny bit better in any way, I want to, especially if it's something that's relatively so simple for me to do. Sure. Right? Give me 60 minutes and see what we can do. Right? Amazing. Let alone more than that or more often or whatever. Yeah. I've had friends who are like, you should go deal with the VA. I'm like, I'm not dealing with the VA. I'm like, they're the reason you guys are my pro bono. They're getting better. It's hard. I can't even imagine what they have to deal with. Yeah. But if there's any veterans, active military, first responders listening, like, please come find me. And I realize not everyone's open to free help. You have to be. And I get that. But even if you just have questions, I travel, I'm in Southern California. San Diego's not that far. Obviously there's base down there. It's good for many, many things. And anyone who's willing to give their life for mine, ours, deserves the biggest gratitude I can offer. And saying thank you is one thing, but this actually lets me feel more productive in my appreciation and gratitude.
Sure.
Does it takes a special person to be willing to run into a burning building, right? Literally jump into the line of fire.
Yeah.
It's not for everybody.
Well, God. Well, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Again, like this is genuinely from the bottom of my heart why I love this podcast. Is like the vast majority of people, I don't know them from Adam when they come on the show. And then you have these conversations and sometimes I'm feeling like, I don't want to do a fucking podcast. You know,
like, other things. Let me remind you why you are. Yeah.
And then you have these type of conversations and they just hit you in a different way. And it's like, that's why I'm doing it. That's why we're doing all this.
And I hope you keep doing it, because someone will listen to this and it will resonate, right? With something you said, with something I said. And I mean, we are all human. And I say a lot of the same things a lot. We are not meant to go it alone. And not everyone has a lot of hands to hold along the journey. And finding just one, even just someone who genuinely cares or that you relate to, right? And you're like, oh my God, they actually get it. It's not just me, right? That's so valuable.
Oh, well, thank you.
Now I want to hug you. I'm such a hugger.
Air hug. It's all good.
Now I really have to come to Texas. Yeah. I'm actually trying to get out there, so.
We will meet in person one of these days, and I'll give you a big hug.
We have to come watch the sunset down at the beach.
Oh yeah. Oh yes. I want to. That, I was telling you the other night. Like that's yeah. I haven't had the kids there.
Yet.
We actually found out we were pregnant with my oldest at San Onofre State Park in San Diego.
Nice.
So, or I guess just not San Diego. No, San, where's San?
That's south.
Yeah, it's definitely south, but I don't know if it's San Diego south.
How far is it? Maybe a little before San Diego.
I think it's just not too far south of Laguna. That area.
Yeah.
I don't know. California is a big one. You guys have
it
a bunch.
It's so funny. People are like, it's either like LA or San Francisco. I'm like, there's a lot more than that.
For sure.
All of it's, I don't even know what some of it is, but there's a lot of it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. It's been my pleasure, genuinely. So
thank you. Likewise.
All right. We'll see you soon. Bye.
Sounds good. Have you ever
felt? Are you listening? Damn. Yeah.